Who roomed there? Delia, Winifred, Irma, Fanny, and Pearl. Their conversation ran along familiar lines. First, Delia said, "There's a ladder in my stocking so far beyond mending that I might as well go bare." Then Fanny said, "Albert's good for another pair." To which Irma replied, "Then it's a shame she threw off Albert and went with those men from the Navy who don't need to supply a girl with stockings before she'll go to a dance hall with them." Then Pearl said, "Delia, you didn't go with all of them, did you?" And Delia retorted, "You couldn't expect me to choose one." This kind of talk had embarrassed Edna terribly the first time she heard it. Before she left home, she'd allowed a friend of her brother's to pay a little attention to her, but she could never imagine stolid and steadfast Dewey Barnes buying her a pair of stockings or taking her to a crowded and noisy dance hall and then letting her stumble home, as the girls at the boarding house did, dazed by liquor and cigarettes, with a sort of swollen and bruised look about the lips that they wore like a badge until it faded. It wasn't that Edna disapproved of their feminine vanity or their wild ways. She just couldn't do what they did. She didn't know how to make herself up and put herself on display. Dancing was a foreign language to her. She felt foolish trying to work out the kangaroo hop or the Peabody, and never could master Delia's trick of kicking her heel back when she turned to make her skirt fly up. She practiced with them because they insisted, but more often than not she took the man's part, maneuvering woodenly while the other girls practiced their flourishes. Only once did she allow herself to be dragged along to a dance hall with them, and there she found herself entirely outmatched. Over the whirl of laughter and music, the other girls chatted gaily with any man who came into their orbit. They had a knack for making the sort of easy, meaningless chatter that would lead to a turn on the dance floor. Then a sip from a bottle secreted away in a man's pocket, a taste of his cigarette, and a kiss just outside the door, sheltered under a dark and discreet night sky. But Edna hadn't any idea where to begin and wasn't sure she wanted to. Every dance step, every smile, every laughing word exchanged with a man was like a piece of machinery that she didn't know how to operate. Instead, she held her friends' purses and went home at midnight with all of their keys, rattling them in every doorknob so that Mrs. Turnbull might hear the sound of all six girls returning home at once. The others didn't mind that Edna stayed home from the dances after that, and for her part, she'd grown accustomed to their ways. She was sitting placidly among them that morning, listening with some amusement, but relieved, as always, that they didn't expect her to join in. "You remember Frank, don't you, from the train station?" Delia whispered. Pearl leaned in and said,
"The one with the walking stick filled with whiskey?"
"Yes," Delia said gleefully. "That one. He asked me to Atlantic City for the weekend. How am I going to get away? I'm all out of sisters with birthdays."
"What about an elderly aunt in a state of decline?" Fanny offered.
"What about inviting me?" Irma complained. "Oh, Frank would like that, but he's to register us as man and wife, and who would you be?"
"I'll be the sister with the birthday, or the elderly aunt. Just take me along."
They were all laughing at that when heavy footsteps stormed the porch and someone pounded the brass knocker hard enough to rattle their saucers. Every girl leapt up at once, flushed and guilty, as if they had, improbably, been overheard and caught. Mrs. Turnbull, having just come up from her lodgings in the basement, bustled past and admonished them to finish quickly and wash their own bowls. But not a single girl moved, and not a single spoon clanked against a dish, as the door swung open and a policeman's brusque voice demanded to see a Miss Edna Hustis, who was to be put under arrest on a charge of waywardness and taken without delay to the Hackensack jail.
Chapter 2.
The female population at the Hackensack jail consisted at that moment of a conniving fortune teller who, among her more colorful aliases, insisted on being called Madame Fitzgerald, a practical nurse named Lottie Wallow, convicted in the overdose of her elderly patient, and Etta McLean, a stenographer who saw